It's just funny to me. I don't know if he's talking about last year or not. I guess when you stop playing, they forget how you lead. It doesn't matter. I'm here with the Raptors and I'm focused on the season and not what's going on the other side.
You are Locked On Fantasy Basketball, your daily podcast on fantasy basketball. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network. Your team every day.
Hello and welcome to the Locked On Fantasy Basketball podcast brought to you by Basketball Monster. My name is Josh Lloyd and I am the lead fantasy analyst at basketballmonster.com, and you can find me on Twitter as always at redrock_bball. Today we're going to be looking back at Sunday's games, we're going to be previewing week 7 and looking at Monday in detail for daily fantasy. So, Michael Bolton,
let's get to it.
Alright, that is a ripper of an idea. We will start where we always do.
Monstrous line of the night.
It does, of course, go to Nikola Vucevic of the Orlando Magic. The Magic in the sixth seed in the Eastern Conference at the moment after sweeping the season series with the LA Lakers. Vucevic, a huge part of that. 36 minutes in today's game against the Lakers. 31-15 with 3 triples, 7 assists, 2 steals and 3 blocks. He was a perfect 8 of 8 from the line and 10 of 20 from the field. He is remarkably the 11th ranked player in fantasy this season, averaging 20-11 with over a steal, over a block and over a three. In fact, he is in the triple 1.1 club. The big change here for Vooch this season, he's playing an extra minute per game, but his scoring is way more efficient. He had a true shooting of 53% last season, 50% the year before, 53% the year before that. He is at 61% this season, hitting 40% of his threes when he was at 31 last season. And he's also taken his two-pointers up over 5 percentage points to be at 58%. So I guess we could look at that and say his overall field goal percentage of 55 does have some room to regress, and that would drop his overall scoring because his usage is basically the same as where it was last season. But that is extra 4 points per game that he's averaging. That's one of those. Some of that's coming because of the extra minutes, but also a lot of that's coming because of this increase in efficiency. The other thing that he's been able to do is increase his assist numbers. He's already had a triple-double. He had a 9 assist game and then a 7 assist game today. So that's been impressive, but it's only marginally above where he was last season. In fact, his assists per 36 have gone from 4.1 to 4.2. So while it feels like he's had a big increase in assists, he hasn't actually changed that much. The big thing that we look at is that big increase in his efficiency numbers, that field goal percentage jumping by almost 8 percentage points. So whether that can remain, I'm not sure. Now, in terms of people who are really worried about drafting Vooch heading into the season, oh, he's definitely going to get traded. And almost always, when we talk about players definitely getting traded, they don't. DeAndre Jordan last season, Brook Lopez the year before that. It just doesn't happen a lot of the time. And with the Magic pushing for a playoff spot, I think that the odds of Vucevic getting traded, despite being an unrestricted free agent at the end of the season, I think they're getting lower by the day. So I don't necessarily, like, I think you could consider selling Vucevic high based on the fact that that field goal percentage and 3-point percentage may not stick. But if you're trying to sell him off based on the fact that he's going to get traded and play 20 minutes, I think that, like, you know, I was all about that. You know, there was a chance that was going to happen. He'd get traded to be a backup on another team and his value would plunge. But I don't think that's necessarily going to happen anymore. So selling for that reason, I don't think is really a viable strategy at this point. But there will be, I guess, some reduction in what he does. You know, with that efficiency, which is quite high, and we're talking career high type numbers for Vooch with the shooting.
Waiver wire line of the night.
This goes to old mate Dwayne Wade of the Miami Heat. Wade turned back the clock for a really big performance. He played 34 minutes and scored 35 points, the most points he's scored since returning to the Heat at the trade deadline last season. 4 triples, 5 rebounds, 6 assists and a block. A massive 34% usage, which was 13 of 22 from the field and 5 of 7 from the line. He's outside the top 150 this season. He can be an interesting streamer. 4 points and assists, averaging 15 and 3, but no steals, limited blocks, low threes. The efficiency is okay from the field, 46, but only 61% from the line. He has improved his efficiency at a career, or not a career, at the best level he's had it in the last 4 seasons, so that's improved there. But you know, relying upon Wade in a 12-team format probably isn't the way you want to go. He's more that 14 to 16-team league player. But to be fair to him, I shit on him quite a bit last season. He is a much better player this season than what he was last season. The efficiency is better. He's not dominating the ball quite as much. Now, he does have a usage of 27, but for the time that he was in Miami last season, his usage was about 30%. So he's actually cut back on that, letting some of the other players have the ball more. And he is fitting into his role, you know, fairly perfectly. He is more, again, that points and assists type streamer for 12-team leagues and more of a 14 to 16-team league guy. The deep leaguer of the night is DeAndre Bembry, because he is rostered in only 4% of Yahoo leagues. He had a fantastic performance, two big games in a row actually from Bembry. 27 minutes against the Hornets in the Hawks' big win, 16-6-6 with two triples and a block. Now, he shot the ball very, very well, 7 of 10 from the field. So trying to gauge what we're getting out of this. His last two games, averaging 15 points, 1.5 threes, 6.5 rebounds, 5 assists, a steal, and 2.5 blocks. So obviously some crazy numbers for Bembry in those last couple of performances. The minutes are probably what we want to look at, 26 and 27, and with Kent Bazemore moving to the bench and seeing his playing time reduced, could Bembry be pushing forward there? Yes. Will he continue to produce at this sort of a level? Probably not. He's more of an assists and defensive stats type streamer in that same vein as Dwayne Wade. He is the 120th ranked player, though, Bembry, in the last 2 weeks, despite playing just 21 minutes. So that can have some back-end 12-team value, but he's more of a let's go grab him in 14s, and anything deeper, he is a clear must-add. I do like Bembry. He's got the ability to contribute right across the board. Think of a Kyle Anderson type that if he was playing 30 minutes a night, he'd be able to put up the sort of value that Anderson returns in his 26 to 30 minutes that he was able to do in San Antonio and now in Memphis this season. That's the sort of player that Bembry is. You're really stepping it up this season, which is great for him after two injury-plagued seasons in the NBA to begin his career. But someone to, I guess, pay attention to in 12-team leagues, but not to necessarily pounce on. I don't think that he'll be playing 27 a night moving forward, but 24, 25 a night could be realistic with Bazemore's role potentially getting quite considerably limited after these last couple of games.
Young Gun of the Night.
The young gun of the night goes to, of course, Triple J, Jaren Jackson Jr. of the Memphis Grizzlies. You know, I've been pretty high on Jackson. I would have taken him number two in the real NBA draft. To me, he was the number two player in dynasty drafts for rookies, and we're seeing that now. 30 minutes, 16 points, 4 triples, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, and 7 blocks. He was 6 of 6 from the field as well, and he is the 53rd ranked player over the course of this season, a top 20 player over the last 2 weeks. This guy is going to have 7 to 10 years of top 25 fantasy value, I believe, in him. The thing that's really been limiting him recently has been foul trouble, and the games where he doesn't get foul trouble, he puts up big numbers. In his last 5 games, he's had 2 games under 20 minutes, a 19-minute game against the Wolves, a 12-minute game against the Spurs. He still contributed okay there, but in the other ones, 27 and 6 with 4 steals and 2 blocks against the Kings, 13 and 3 with 2 steals and 4 blocks against the Mavericks, 27 and 3 with 3 blocks against the Clippers, and then today the 7 blocks in 30 minutes against the Knicks while still accumulating the 5 fouls. So he is absolutely, now he is not rostered in as many leagues as you need to be, 81%. He is a must roster player in 8-team leagues, 10-team leagues, 12-team leagues. He has got a massive shot at a top 50 finish for this season. The blocks are fantastic. He's generating steals. His field goal percentage is significantly higher than we anticipated. That's great for a rookie. Sometimes it's hard for those guys to come in and be efficient, but he's being efficient. He is going to be an absolute beast for many, many years to come, and we're seeing it. You know, I probably 1 or 2 months ahead of schedule here. Jermichael Green is no threat to Jaren Jackson's minutes. Jaren Jackson is the future of not only this team for this season, the young guys, but you know, he's more important to the future of this team than Mike Conley and Marc Gasol. Just been absolutely fantastic so far for the Grizzlies in his first season and showing it for everyone in fantasy as well, if you did take that. And I guess some people thought it was a risk to take him at number two in dynasty leagues. I reckon if you did happen to do that, you'd be pretty bloody pleased with your results so far. Guys, you need to go and follow the Locked On Podcast Network on Twitter and on Instagram, Locked On NBA Net. It's the best Twitter account for you to go follow, apart from my one, of course. It gets all of the hosts across the network combined into one feed so that anything that goes down, rotation changes, injury news, weird play, you get that through that one feed. So go ahead and follow Locked On NBA Net on Twitter and on Instagram. The biggest stories of the day are condensed into the Instagram story format, so check it out. They're doing great work on Instagram and Twitter at Locked On NBA Net. Let's move into the last award of the night. Yes, it's the dud of the night, Lou Williams. Just an absolute stinker from Lou. He played only 17 minutes in this game, 4 points with 3 rebounds, and shot the ball terribly, 2 of 13. We got big minutes from Gildas Alexander. We got a bit of an extended run from Milos Teodosic, 34 minutes from Avery Bradley. It just wasn't a good night from Lou. I don't think that we have anything necessarily to panic about with what Williams is doing, but he is not going to reach the levels that we saw last season. He is the 100th ranked player this season, playing 26 minutes, still scoring 18 points. But the volume of what he's doing is just not the same as what we saw last season. One thing that can increase with Williams is his steal rate, which is well down. He's been about a steal per game guy over his career. He is at 0.5 at the moment and only hitting 1.2 triples this season. Just 31% of his three-point attempts are going in, and he's attempting a significantly lower portion of his shots from three-point land than he has in the past as well. So there is some room for improvement. He is not a drop guy at this point, but I don't think you should be considering him a significant buy low with the hopes that he returns to what he did last season or even the year before. I think that might be somewhat of a stretch to expect that out of Lou Williams. The plus minus goats, the best net rating went to Josh the Hitman Hart of the Lakers, plus 116, while the worst net rating went to the blue swimmer, Alan Crabb, negative 119.5. He tried his very best to one-up Andrew Wiggins' piss-poor Saturday performance. He didn't even take shots. He was out there for 30 minutes and barely did a thing. He is just not a good NBA player. He is in contention for the most overpaid player in the entire NBA. Pretty clear he's not a 10, a 12, or a 14-team league guy. Yeah, Josh Hart's not a 12-teamer anyway, so if you do have Hart still in a 12-team league, I think you should feel pretty confident about moving on from the Hitman at this point. Injury reports, Chrissy Paul is dealing with a leg injury. It doesn't appear to be too serious, but if Eric Gordon's on your wire, you can just grab him. Now, Gordon has that really minimal value when everyone's healthy, but when someone goes down, he can push to top 50. You've got Jaylen Brown, who's likely to miss Monday with a back issue. That's going to up the value of guys like Marcus Smart and Terry Rozier for that short term. Again, not considered a serious problem. While the Don, Donovan Mitchell, missed today's game with a rib contusion. Royce O'Neal started, but it was ravishing Rick Rubio who stepped up in that scenario. Again, thankfully, not too serious. Same with Gary Harris. Mike Malone scared everyone by saying it was an Achilles problem, but then the team said, no, it's just ankle soreness. He did miss the Nuggets game on Saturday. Nothing to really worry too much about there. With him out, we saw Torrey Craig step into the starting lineup and have a decent performance, and we saw some big games from Juancho Hernangómez, and Trey Lyles stepped up as well in Harris's absence. Anthony Davis missed because of a quad and hip strain, not a serious problem, so that's great news there. While Dennis Smith Jr. also missed over the weekend with a wrist problem. I'm not really there to drop Smith just yet, but he's not as high a priority guy. So if the injury is considered more long-term and misses a week or two, then maybe you could consider Smith a drop with the way they'd been utilizing his minutes alongside JJ Barea. It had been a bit of a struggle. And then in today's game, Yusuf Nurkic had to leave with a shoulder contusion. He left the game before... But he left the locker room before reporters were able to get in and ask him, so we don't really have any update on Nurkic's shoulder. It doesn't appear too serious. Zach Collins got into pretty significant foul trouble, fouled out really quickly. Myers Leonard started the second half. If Nurkic misses time, Collins would be the guy over Leonard that I'd be looking to, but it doesn't appear to be too serious of an issue. Mo Harkless also started this game for the Blazers, went to the locker room and then never returned. Whether that was the minutes restriction part of it, just to get some treatment on his knee as he returns from that knee issue, he is a long way away, in my opinion, from being a 12-team player. Just not really there yet with Mo Harkless. Is your company looking for a new way to reach customers? Your company could be mentioned right now. Podcast listeners are 60% more likely to interact with the sponsors that they hear on their favorite podcast. Our demographic, the old sausage sizzle, we're 98% male, higher educated, and higher earning than your traditional media audiences. Have your company sponsor this podcast by emailing me at redrockfantasybasketball@gmail.com. Let's move on to these games now. This is the 8 games from Sunday. Break them down and try and talk about some information that we can glean from those performances. The first game we take a look at is the Orlando Magic beating the Los Angeles Lakers for the second time this season. Another solid game from DJ Augustin, 12-5-9. The upside's limited, but as a okay scoring, 3-point shooting assist point guard, he does have a place in 12-team leagues. Terry Ross got hot, 16-6 with 4 triples and 2 steals. He's a 3-point steals streamer on that periphery of 12-team leagues. Mo Bamba added a block and 2 steals, but he is not. With the way Vooch is playing, as I touched on earlier, Bamba is just not going to have an impact in standard leagues outside of just streaming him for your blocks category. Johnny Isaac still struggling, 24 minutes, and many people will be pretty keen to drop Isaac. His steals and blocks aren't where they were last season or what they were through his college career. I am still holding him. I believe that he will get that starting spot back off Wes Iwundu. Iwundu only played 5 minutes in this game as the starter, with Simmons, Isaac, and Ross getting the bulk of those minutes. And when the defensive numbers start coming from Isaac, then the value's there. But if you don't believe in it, yeah, I wouldn't class him as a must roster guy, a guy you have to hold under all circumstances. Also, a shit night from Fournier, 6 points on 10 shots. He will bounce back. For the Lakers, the panic over JaVale McGee, he had 12-7 with 7 blocks. I think you can feel pretty rest assured there. The minutes from Tyson Chandler are reducing. He's been around 20 or under 20 in each of the last 3 games. Only 15 minutes here for Chandler. LeBron James had 24-4-7. And Lonzo had 9-10. Kuzma, probably Kuzma's best game for a while, 21-4-5. I would be selling the shit out of Kuzma. If anyone buys into him being a top 80 type performer, any crazed Laker fans that really are into the future MVP, I'd be looking to move Kuzma after this performance, because he was bordering on droppable type territory for 10 team leagues before this game. KCP with a weird defensive game, 5 steals and a block, but not much to really care about there. And I think at this point, we have to accept that Brandon Ingram is not a good free throw shooter and not a good fantasy player. 17-6 with 2 steals, but just doesn't hit threes, doesn't hit his free throws. The assists are well down from where they've been over the past couple of seasons. He is just struggling to be a top 100 guy, and I'm not sure he's going to get there this season with those other players on the roster for the Lakers. The next game, we look at the Phoenix Suns and the Detroit Pistons. Point guard Devin Booker in action again. That's 3 of the last 4 games. Surely the Suns have to stick with this. Isaiah Kanan is not an NBA level player, let alone a starter. Booker had 37-4-5, while McCall Bridges, who started alongside him, it wasn't a great night for McCall. 2 points, but 7 rebounds and 3 assists. 1 of 8 shooting. The no defense there from McCall. That's what's going to limit his value. I still believe in him as a 12-team league player. I think he's a must-roster guy. I know that Matt Smith, my colleague at Basketball Monster, tends to be of the opposite opinion, and that's fine. We can all have differing opinions on this, but I am big on Bridges. Yeah, figuring it out as a triple one type guy, a low usage type of player. But he's not going to be for everybody. And if you've got a very strong team, then perhaps you can't fit him on. I think he will be a top 100 guy for the rest of the way. DeAndre Ayton blocked 3 shots, so that's great for him. 25-13 on 85% shooting, a strong night there. While Trevor Ariza only had the 5 points. I think he is more of a 14-team league player. Joshie Jackson got some extra minutes with TJ Warren ejected. Only 15 minutes for Warren, so Jackson played 24 and had 10 points and 4 rebounds. Still just leaving him for the deeper leagues, but his play, I give credit where it's due, he's been shit. But his play over the last 2 weeks has been much improved. Not enough to really get anywhere near 12 or even 14 team league value, but an improvement nonetheless. For the Pistons, 31 minutes for Reggie Jackson, 19-2-8. Dwayne Casey keeps talking about, his fitness isn't quite there, he's still getting his win back, and we're seeing his minutes start to increase. I think he still is a 12-team league. I'd have him as a priority over DJ Augustin, for example, but below, say, a Shai Gilgeous-Alexander. We know that Jackson's upside is pretty limited, but when he has these games where he gives you 2 steals and 4 triples, things that he is notoriously poor at, then that's a real bonus. Stan Johnson is outplaying the little dog Glenn Robinson. 25 minutes for Stan, 14-4 with 2 steals. He is a steals streamer, but a pretty solid 14-16 team league guy. That's probably probably about it for Stan. Drummond had 19 and 16 with 5 steals, and Griffin had 16, 3, and 11. Drummond's free throws have fallen off completely. 1 of 8 in today's game, and he is back into that must-punt territory for free throw percentage. Not that he wasn't quite there. Look, he'd improved last season, but he was still a punt guy, and now he has regressed, which is quite disappointing if you hoped he could potentially take another step forward, because that doesn't look like it's happening. The Miami Heat and the Toronto Raptors. We have to talk about Hassan Whiteside, who played just 12 minutes and had 2 points, 5 rebounds, and 2 assists. He picked up his fourth foul about 3 minutes into the third quarter and then never returned. So it's a combination of foul trouble and the fact that Bam Adebayo was absolutely killing it. Adebayo had 16 and 21 in 36 minutes with a steal and 2 blocks. Now, I don't think that this means that the Heat are turning the reins over to Bam Adebayo, but the last two games, 22 minutes for Whiteside and 12 minutes. That game against the Bulls in 21 minutes, he did have 18 and 10 with a steal and 4 blocks, so it was far from a poor performance, but today's game was a little bit more troublesome. I am still holding on to Whiteside, I'm not overly panicking, and I'm not rushing to grab Adebayo, because I just don't think that sort of a minute split is a realistic proposition. 26 and 22, maybe, but 22 minutes of Bam Adebayo, does that make him must roster? Probably not. Now, I think Adebayo's got top 25 upside in the next 2 to 3 seasons. It probably won't be this season. Joshie Richardson had 19 points on 19 shots with 5 rebounds, while James Johnson started. He didn't make us proud, unfortunately, just the 6 points with 3 assists. I'd be looking at Jimmy as a 14 to 16 team league guy, same as Justice Winslow, and I think we can feel okay about dropping Scooter Magruder. Magruder had 7 and 3. He played 35 minutes, but the production's nowhere near where it was. Nice defense, 2 steals and a block, but I don't think that we're looking at Magruder as that solid option anymore. On to the Raptors, the fun guy, Kawhi Leonard.
I'm a fun guy.
Filled it up with 29 and 10, 3 triples, a steal, and 2 blocks. Continues to be very solid, and it looks like him sitting one game of the back-to-backs is going to be over pretty soon. But let's talk Pascal Siakam, who had 21 and 6, 3 assists, 2 steals and 2 blocks, and was 8 of 9 from the field. Continues to be amazing in that field goal percentage category. The numbers had dipped a little bit over the previous couple of games, but still fantastic numbers, 14 and 7. And his value, though, is coming almost exclusively from that field goal percentage category. So you can look at his overall rank and go, yeah, he is the 45th ranked player this season. But if we look at the Z-score contribution, we're talking about a 2 in the field goal percentage category, and the next highest is a 0.5 in steals. So that just shows how positive he is. Now, his only other positive category is rebounds, where he is a 0.2, so marginally above average value in a fantasy league. If that field goal percentage drops, and not to say it will, but if it drops down significantly, then a lot of his value goes away, because that is making up the bulk of his value. So realistically, he's not a one-cat wonder. He's helping in steals and rebounds as well, but he's not a well-rounded player as many top 50 guys are. So there is, I guess, that is, you know, a huge variation or a huge valuation change based on, you know, what he's going to bring to your team. And it's why when I talk about trades, is this a fair trade? Is this a fair trade? Look, guys trading in and out, guys like Siakam can make massive changes, like drop your field goal percentage by 2 or 3 overall percent, change the other guys, but then you hurt yourself in the threes and you don't get that many points and you don't get that many assists and you go below average in blocks and blah, blah, blah. But his overall value is inflated by that one category pretty significantly. So that is important to note, but he has been excellent this season. Jonas Valanciunas started his third consecutive game, 17 and 10. Not saying he's going to start for the rest of the year, but it's interesting. Whiteside's a good matchup for him, but I didn't think he'd start all of these games. Ibaka was still okay, 8 and 7, so nothing to really change in terms of, you know, whether you roster Ibaka or Valanciunas. Both of them are 12 team league guys. Lowry had 12 and 10 in this game also. Let's talk about the New York Knicks, who won their third consecutive game against the Memphis Grizzlies, 103-98. Emmanuel Mudiay had 17, 2 and 4 with a steal and a block. And even though he is playing well, he's still not getting all that many minutes. Just 23 minutes in this one. You know, really high usage, good assist numbers, good steal and block numbers. And over the last 2 weeks, he is a top 85 player, averaging 15 points. Not doing a huge amount else, and that's coming on 52% shooting. The steals are pretty nice. Not saying that I don't think he's a must roster player, but you could have a look at him for the time being, because I would imagine that this starting lineup sticks for a couple of weeks at least, or at least until it falls off. Trey Burke played more minutes than Moutier, 29 minutes, 15, 3, and 3. Shot horribly, but still was able to put up a decent line, which has always been my concern with Burke. If their mid-range shooting dropped off, would he be able to do anything else? And it turns out, yes, he was able to. Enes Kanter had 21 and 26 in 41 minutes. He is just as likely to play 24 minutes in the next game. Minutes are really up and down there. We saw Mitchell Robinson only play the 13 here. His value in 12 teamers is kaput. Well, Noah Vonleh, who was turning into an absolute beast, he reverted back into what he is, not that good of a player. The numbers were okay, 7 and 6 with a block, but he was putting up numbers of the extreme variety. In fact, over the last four games, he's the 21st ranked player. In large parts, he's averaging 13 and 10 with two blocks, over a steal and over two threes, and shooting 56% from deep. I would have to think that some of that shooting is going to drop off, and his block rate is considerably higher than anything he's done really in his career, at least over the last three seasons. Back in Charlotte in his rookie season, where he only played 250 minutes, he was getting 1.3 blocks per 36. Each season after that, under one block per 36, which is really piss poor in terms of rim protection. But he is up that this season. He is okay to have in a 12-team league, but I think some of the recent performances have been relatively fluky with that high block rate and high three-point shooting. Mario Hezonja continues to start and do nothing, while Kevin Knox, under 10 minutes in two consecutive games. Clearly you're not rostering him in 12 or even 14 team leagues at this point. On to the Grizzlies. Marc Gasol continues to be excellent, 27, 8, and 4 with two steals and five blocks, while Conley had 23 and 11 on some poor shooting and not much else really. Jermichael Green shouldn't really be near your 12 team league rosters, only 19 minutes, 6 and 7 with two blocks. He'd need about 38 minutes anyway to come close to being a 12 team must roster guy, and he is not getting that. While Kyle Anderson only had the 4 points, but nice, 6 rebounds, 3 assists, 1 steal, and 2 blocks. You hate that he missed all three of his free throws, but the other numbers are pretty much in line with what we expect from Anderson on a relatively regular basis. Pretty clearly you can drop Shelvin Mack as well. He had that nice little run, which is pretty obviously unsustainable. The next game we look at, the Philadelphia 76ers beat the Brooklyn Nets 127-125. Jimmy Butler hitting the game winner. He had 34 and 12, a season high for Butler. Four steals, 5 triples for Jim. Really, really good numbers there. While Joel Embiid had another 30 and 10 game, 32 and 12 with 2 blocks on elite efficiency. Great to see those guys putting up big numbers together. And Benny Simmons joined the party as well, 13, 5, and 9 with 3 steals and 2 blocks. And if the bloke who started that petition to have Kendall Jenner banned, is it Kendall or Kylie? I don't know. One of those Jenners, whichever Jenner that Simmons is boning, whoever started that petition to have Jenner banned from the arena, get a grip, mate. Just calm. So I need to get the evil that is the Kardashians out of the arena. Mate, you are a dickhead. Landry Shamet, 16 points in 19 minutes with 4 triples, an elite 3-point streamer. Consider him like the Duke Wayne Ellington. He's got a consistent role. He bangs in threes. He's not doing too much else, but if you want threes, Shamet's the guy. Baby Neck Wilson Chandler, 10, 3, and 5, still just 14 to 16 teamers for him. While not much else happening with that Sixers team. Onto the Nets, almost a career high from D'Angelo Russell. 38, 8 and 8 with a block. Only got one shot down the stretch, which was pretty weird, but he was excellent. And his season has been fantastic, as has Spencer Dinwiddie, who had 31, 3 and 5. Pretty clearly, Dinwiddie is a must roster player. First start for the season for Rondae Hollis-Jefferson. It was okay. 13 and 6 in 30 minutes with a block and a 3. If you want to go and grab him in 12-team leagues, by all means. I don't think his upside's all that high, but he can easily have top 110, top 100 value, which is fine. Jarrett Allen, 17 and 10, while the Blue Swimmer, I referenced him earlier. He played 25 minutes, took 4 shots, missed them all, and had 1 assist. I don't know how you can go a whole game and have 1 assist and only take 4 shots. He is just insipid at this point. Jared Dudley down to the 14 minutes with Rondae back starting. The next game, the Charlotte Hornets and the Atlanta Hawks. Malik Monk, who was a DNP CD last game, came in, played 24 minutes, had 26 points with 7 triples, set a career high. Almost impossible, not almost, literally impossible to predict that sort of performance from Monk. Who knows if he will be able to maintain that? Probably not. But he did it without Michael Kidd-Gilchrist and Tony Parker, so his role won't be this big. He also won't be this hot of a shooter majority of the time. Kemba Walker, he is starting to aggress a bit here, 22, 5, and 9 on some poor shooting, while Marvin Williams went big, 20 and 13 with 4 triples. Don't buy it. He is a 14 to 16, probably more 16 than 14, to be honest, team league guy. Jeremy Lamb is a clear must-roster player, 13 and 8 with 2 steals and 2 triples, 30 minutes for Lamb, and Batum had 14, 4 and 5. While Frank Kaminsky appears to have taken over Bill Hernan Gomez as the backup center, Kaminsky is a 20-team league sort of a player. For the Hawks, Kent Bazemore, he moved to the bench, but played well. 25 minutes, 20 points on 9 of 11 shooting. Now, of course, he won't continue to shoot like that, and when he doesn't, the minutes will drop, and I think that he is probably... counterproductive of me to say that he is a drop now, given how well he played in this game. But if there's a free agent out there in a 10-team league, and Bazemore's a guy that you consider, I think when we're weighing up... Now, you don't want to be caught prisoner of the moment and go, well, how can I drop him? He just scored 20 points, because I don't think that's going to be anywhere close to what he produces long-term. Now, I could very easily be wrong with that, and maybe this kickstarts him and he moves back to starting. Maybe the ankle was bothering him. Maybe that's why he moved to the bench. But all signs had pointed to his minutes dropping. The future of this team points to his minutes dropping. He just got hot in this game, and that gave him extra minutes. So I think if you're looking for someone, if someone foolishly dropped Jaren Jackson Jr. and you've got Kent Bazemore, then you make that switch. There's no thought process really required. I would drop Bazemore to grab Jeremy Lamb, for example. I would drop Bazemore to grab McCall Bridges, personally. So while it seems dumb to drop Bazemore here, try and trade the shit out of him. See if you can get anything out of him after this point, or if that, you know, high priority free agents there, I wouldn't be too scared of it. The Baptist, he's back, 23 and 11 with 4 assists and a block. It's going to be a really good ride for him for the rest of the season. And Trey Young played 30 minutes, and the positive here, he played 30 minutes, had 18, 2 and 5 with 2 steals. But with him playing 30 minutes, Jeremy Lin also played 21. 12 points, 2 triples, 4 assists and a block. I think Lin's a 12-team guy, and if I was pressed, if someone put a gun to my head, and don't anyone ever put a gun to my head when playing fantasy basketball, it's just not worth it. If I had to make that choice and say Lin or Bazemore, I'd probably take Lin, to be honest, at this point. And maybe that's just because I'm a notorious Kent Bazemore hater. Seems like a ripper bloke. I'm just not sure he's a great basketball player. I reckon I might take Lin over Bazemore for the rest of the season. Huerta made the start. Now, Kevin Huerta only took 2 shots, a minuscule usage of 7%. 22 minutes in that start. This was the change that we talked about a lot in the offseason, that he would be starting for Bazemore as they try and get that young Huerta combination going. And the real appeal in Huerta is his ability to contribute in multiple categories. Now, only the 4 points, but 3 rebounds, 5 assists, and 2 steals. If that was a 10-point game, which is not crazy, that's him making another 3 shots, he made 1 in this game. That's a pretty good night. You know, 10, 3, and 5 with 2 steals. He is a 12-team watch list guy. I'd add him in 16-teamers, and I'd consider him in 14-team leagues. Yeah. A pretty shit night from the artist formerly known as Taurean Prince. 16 points. It's a real Andrew Wiggins, this one. 16 points, 1 rebound, and nothing else. Still holding him. If he gets dropped, he's a clear add. Terrible nights from the centers. The Undertaker, Dwayne Dedman, 2 points, and Alex Len had 8 and 4. Dedman's a 12-teamer. Len is a 14 to 16-team league player, in my humble opinion. The next game was a blowout. The Utah Jazz finally got one over on the Sacramento Kings. No Don Mitchell, so ravishing Rick Rubio went bananas. 11 of 16 from the field for 27 points, 7 rebounds, 5 assists. The Jazz won 133 to 112. Ingles was good. Derek Favors moved to the bench. It was thought to be a matchup-based move, and he brought the defense. 11 and 7 with 3 steals and 3 blocks. His defensive numbers have been up this season. He has 12-team value on the basis of those defensive numbers, but that's really about it. It didn't really change much in terms of him coming off the bench or starting. He's playing the same amount of minutes, and he's doing the same sort of thing. Jay Crowder started, had 14 and 5. It doesn't change much for him either. Still the same sort of role, still the same sort of stats as a fringe 12-team league player. Hull Neto got his minutes increased with Mitchell out. Royce O'Neal started and did very little. There, not much to really take out of that this game, as it was a blowout. Now let's move on to the Kings side. Iman Shumpert was resting, so Bogdan Bogdanovic started. He had 23 and 3. I can't stress enough how much of a must roster Bogdan Bogdanovic is. I don't know whether he will remain starting, but he played 30 minutes last game off the bench. He played 34 minutes here starting. His minutes are fine. Harry Giles, people are going to be very interested to see what this line was. 20 minutes, 10, 8, and 6, 4 steals and 2 blocks. Easily the best performance of his career, one of the best performances of the night. Kostas Koufos, I know he's injured at the moment, but he won't be getting back into that rotation. But I don't think we should be looking at Giles to repeat this sort of production all that often. Now, he did take a lot of minutes off Willie Cauley-Stein, and they do believe that the Giles-Bagley front court is their front court of the future over Cauley-Stein, so that's worth mentioning. I think in a 16-team league, you would add Giles, and you could even make that switch in a 14-team league. Now, I'm not dropping Corley Stein at this point, but it is a trend to watch here at this stage. Bielitsa had 12-5 in only 18 minutes, didn't miss a shot, and played 18 minutes. That's pretty telling. I think he can go in 10 and 12-team leagues, while Bagley had 18-6 with two blocks in 30 minutes. And it's pretty telling to look at Bagley's line, 18-6 with two blocks, and see that it's not as fantasy impactful as what Bielitsa did. This is what Bagley is, not a great fantasy player, but the numbers still look okay, and he should be a 12-team league guy. Fox struggled in this game, wasn't his best performance, 12-2-3 with three steals, and some of his shooting, it's starting to come back to earth, which is, you know, far from unexpected given how hot he was to begin the season. The last game of the night was the Clippers and the Blazers. Toby Harris had a season-high 34-11, while the Rooster Danilo Gallinari had 17-8-4. A big game from Shai Gilgeous, well, a relatively big game from Gilgeous Alexander, 12-4, two assists, a steal, and a block. 30 minutes, I think he's a 12-team must-roster guy. I'll continue to state that. While Montrezl Harrell, the free throws, which had been much improved this season, they finally fell away. Just 4 of 12 to really kill you on the last day of a weekly matchup. But still 32 minutes, still two steals, still two blocks, and 14-10. He has been a top 50 player all season, and I don't see that going away. Avery Bradley had three steals, but also shot 2 of 11. He is a deep league guy, while Patrick Beverley is a droppable guy in 12-team formats. On the Blazers, Lillard had 30-6, strong from him, while McCollum had 18-9. And the Chief, Al-Farouq Aminu.
Sometimes it may be good, sometimes it may be shit.
He was shit. 0 points in 31 minutes with 7 rebounds. Myers Leonard, 16 boards for Leonard, 2 triples and 9 points in 24 minutes. He could have some 14-team league value if Nurkic does happen to miss time. While I referenced earlier Zachy Collins, he fouled out in 19 minutes, but still had 9 and 3 and 3 blocks. And if I had to choose between those two guys as who would be your Nurkic replacement, if Nurk does miss time, then it's pretty clearly, in my opinion, Zach Collins. I mentioned Mo Harkless. He had 4 points in those 17 minutes. We'll see if there's any report on his knee or why he didn't reappear in the second half after starting the game and replacing big Jake Lehman. In fact, interestingly, Lehman out of the rotation entirely in this game after starting all season. He is gone. Apparently good enough to start, but not good enough to play after that, which is always a weird phenomenon when that does go down, which happens in the NBA with pretty regular regularity, but that just sounds like a really, really bad English. Hi guys, Josh Lloyd here. Just thought I'd do something a little bit different, hopefully make this a weekly segment, but looking at guys who could be potentially on your waiver wire, mainly looking at 12-team formats here, but players who can have some value, who could be around. I'm targeting guys who majority of the time are under 50% rostered in Yahoo leagues, a couple of them up at about 65%, which means they are still available in some 10 and 12-team formats. So we'll go through those, some of them for long-term, some of them for short-term use. One guy who I am pretty interested in for the rest of the season is McCall Bridges of the Phoenix Suns. I think he's going to start, if not all of the rest of the games, at least the majority of them. I think he's going to have top 100 value for the season. Now, there's been a few shaky moments this season. His usage is not going to be high, so don't expect high scoring from Bridges, but his ability to hit threes, to get steals, and to get blocks makes him pretty useful. And in fact, over the last 6 games, he's already a top 80 player in only 26 minutes per night. Now, that's fueled by really high shooting, 54 and 92%, including 40% from three. But if that drops off a little bit, then he still becomes that top 100 guy, and he is available in many, many leagues. His percentage rostered on Yahoo is just 15%. So I like him as a long-term 12-team guy. If you don't expect the world, you won't be disappointed, but he is going to be able to help in those peripheral categories. I feel pretty good about that. Wes Matthews, another guy who I think is going to be a top 100 player for the majority of the rest of the season. Matthews is available in over 50% of Yahoo leagues as well. He is back from that hamstring injury, which cost him a couple of games. His on-court play hasn't been fantastic, but the minutes are still there for Matthews. He's just around the top 100 mark for the season. He's not shooting that well, but still scoring 16 points per game, getting you a steal per game, 2.5 threes, getting to the line a decent amount and hitting those free throws nicely too. And he's around in many different formats, so I think Wes Matthews is a nice one to have a look at for the rest of the season. Jeremy Lin is someone who I think is worth a look at in majority of standard leagues as well. He's had some really big games recently. He can play alongside Trae Young. He's backing up Trae Young. He does not need 30 minutes a night to be a useful fantasy player. And over the last 2 weeks, Jeremy Lin is a top 50 player in only 23 minutes. Now, he's shooting 59% from the field, so we know that's going to come back down. Over 4 assists, 1.3 steals, 3 rebounds, 2 triples. These are all good numbers from Lin. He's also shooting really poorly from the line in that time. He's a better free throw shooter than that, so there's some trade-off that can happen there. But I think Lin has a chance to not only be a top 120 guy, but perhaps be a top 100 player, depending on how they go with the minutes. Now, over the last 6 games, his minutes have looked 21, 25, 24, 13, 26, and 30. So obviously that one sticking out like a sore thumb there against the Clippers where he played 13 minutes, but every other game, big playing time. Now, I don't expect the 30 or 26 minutes to be a regular occurrence from Lin, but in his minimal minutes, he can still be an impact player. Shai Gilgeous-Alexander is also rostered in just 50% of Yahoo leagues. He is entrenched as a starter for the Clippers. I think he's got a chance to be. Now, he's not going to be a top 50 player or a top 60 player this season. I think that would be, you know, putting some unrealistic expectations, but I think he can approach that top 100 type of mark or at least be a top 120 player. He is top 140 so far this season in only 28 minutes per game. He's shooting the ball okay, but still only 29% from three, so some room to improve there. He was a 40% three-point shooter in College of Kentucky. He'd get you a steal a game, over half a block a game, some assists, some rebounds. He's not going to wow you, but I think he is a guy that is someone you should be looking at your waiver wire to see if he is around. Justin Holiday is someone who is, he is over 50% rostered, but still not high enough, currently coming in at 66% on Yahoo. He is playing an absolute shit ton of minutes at the moment for the Bulls, and with Denzel the Hammer Valentine ruled out for the rest of the season, Holiday is going to be getting lots of playing time there. Chandler Hutchison is not someone who's taking that role. Jabari Parker, maybe when Lauri Markkanen and PunchBob Shiploke return, that Parker moves to the small forward position, but Hoiberg has been pretty adamant that he doesn't want to play him there. Holiday is a top 50 player so far this season on the back of 3 threes per game and 1.6 steals, and he's hitting 94% of his free throws on minimal volume. So he's really a fantasy 3 and D specialist, a steals and threes guy, but he's getting them in such large volumes and so consistently that he should be rostered in every 12-team league and probably every 10-team league with the way that he is playing at the moment. Jeremy Lamb, the same. At the start of the season, Lamb was splitting time with Malik Monk, but Monk has been out of the rotation for the last couple of games, and Lamb's minutes have pushed back up towards 30. The Hornets are playing well. Borrego is going to continue to ride him, I would imagine. He is the 80th ranked player so far this season already, Lamb, but rostered only 68% of leagues, so that means he is a top, a 10-team league must-roster player. But he isn't because he's still available in many spots, averaging 14 and 5. But over his last 5 games, he's averaging 20 and 7 with 1.2 steals. Jeremy Lamb is a must roster player. Noah Vonleh is someone who over the last couple of games has put up some very impressive numbers. Now, with David Fizdale, we have absolutely no idea what to trust on an ongoing basis. Vonleh has already been named a starter twice this season. He's currently there at the moment, but he had moved to the bench prior to that. And he's on the back of 3 double-doubles, now recording this before today's game against the Grizzlies. But in those last 3 games, he's had 14 and 14, 16 and 10, and 14 and 11, with multiple threes in all of those games, multiple steals in 2 of the 3 games, and multiple blocks in 2 of the 3 games, really putting together some impressive numbers. In fact, over that 3-game stretch, he is the 11th-ranked player in fantasy basketball, and he is a top 65 guy over the last 2 weeks. I'm not expecting Vonleh to remain a top 100 guy because I just don't have that faith in Fizdale to play him in the consistent role. I also, you know, over the last 6 games, he's shooting 50% from 3. I don't have any faith in that being able to continue. And he's been able to increase his block rate as well. So there is some elements there with Vonleh that could slide, but the way he's playing at the moment, and when the Knicks are competitive and playing well, which they have been the last few games that he's been starting, I think you have to roll with him and consider him a guy to roster. I say Etuan Moore here as well as a waiver wire player because he is available in more leagues and he probably should be. 64% of leagues he is rostered in Yahoo. Now, he is doing some stuff that is fairly unsustainable, but we are a quarter of the way through the season and he's continuing to shoot at a crazy level, 47% from three, 55% overall. He's a top 100 player on the season. I don't expect him to remain at 55% from the field, considering he is a 67% free throw shooter, and he's not doing a huge amount else. Under a steal, only two assists, under three rebounds. So there's not a lot happening there with Moore. When we look at Z-score values for what he's done this season, his field goal percentage comes in at 1.2. His next highest category is threes at 0.3. So we're talking about a quarter of the value is his next highest category. So field goal percentage is four times as valuable as anything else that Moore brings. And if that goes from 55 down to, say, 50%, a more realistic expectation, then he does lose a ton of value. But for now, you add him, you roster him, and you see how that pans out from there. Chetty Osman is rostered in 40% of Yahoo leagues. He didn't have a great game the last time out, but the game before that, he'd looked pretty solid. You feel pretty good about him being locked in as the starting small forward slash power forward on this Cavs team. There'll be some rocky nights, but the previous two games before the game against Houston, he'd scored 21 and 20 points with 8 and 7 rebounds in those games and shot the ball better. And then against the Rockets, he was just 1 of 6, but added 3 assists and 2 steals. I don't think that you should be leaving Osman on the waiver wire. I feel pretty good about his rest of the season value. A couple of other Cavs guys to talk about here. The Padawan Colin Sexton is putting up some good numbers at the moment. I still, have my concerns about what he can do because his big games, they come on high volume, high efficiency scoring, and he doesn't do a huge amount else apart from that. And even with him averaging over 20 points a game over the last six games, he still is only the 100th ranked player in fantasy, and he's shooting 51 and 81% in that time. That's because he's giving you no rebounds, assists, steals, or blocks. And that's the concern. But those points are obviously very, very valuable, and that high field goal percentage is nice, even though I don't expect that level of efficiency to be able to continue. You have to roster Sexton at the moment, and you have to consider him someone to keep for the rest of the season. These next three guys I'm going to talk about are more short-term players. I'm looking at value over the next 2 weeks. Rocket Rodney Hood of the Cleveland Cavaliers. The Cavs play 8 games over the next 2 weeks, so there is some value in him. He will be up and down, but being able to add that scoring and those threes that Hood does bring, that could be a useful thing. Again, this is more just a short-term situation. I think he's going to be a top 100 type of player over the next couple of weeks, so he can bring value in that short period of time. Another player very similarly to Hood, who I'm not sure is a must roster player for the rest of the season, but Rondae Hollis-Jefferson of the Brooklyn Nets. His schedule works out pretty nicely for him the next couple of weeks. Nice string of games, good balance of opponents that he's playing against as well. I think he is a short-term add to take a look at, although I'm not sold on him long-term, much as I am not sold long-term on Rocket Rodney Hood. And the last one is purely a streamer for these next couple of weeks, Wes Johnson of the New Orleans Pelicans. He'll be a starter for this time. The Pelicans play 8 games. And if you're looking for someone to stream for steals and for blocks and three, so a bit of a triple one streamer, Wes Johnson could be that guy for you. He's not going to do huge amounts for you. He's not going to play big minutes, but you can get 8 games worth of Johnson. You can have a look, 4 games this week, 4 games next week. Use Johnson, get those steals in. It's really just a short-term play and only really a specialist, but he's someone who's available in many, many leagues. So 12-team leagues, he can have value, but 14s and 16s, especially for this two-week period, Wes Johnson is someone that you can take a look at. That'll wrap it up for my waiver wire segment for this week. Let me know what you guys think of it, whether I should continue it each week. I probably will, but let me know what you guys think and some suggestions and thoughts. You can do that in the comments below, or you can tweet at me at redrock_bball. Guys, see ya. All right, let's look at week 7 now in the NBA. Look at the team with the best schedule and the team with the worst schedule. The Charlotte Hornets have the best schedule, 4 games, all 4 of those at home. They take on the Bucks, they take on the Hawks, they have the Jazz, and they have the Pelicans. So an opportunity for guys like Nick Batum, if he's on your wire, you grab him, or you grab him regardless, but maybe Marvin Williams is someone. Cody Zeller could be someone who has some value for you this week. Deeper leagues, you look at Miles Bridges as an option, and maybe you take a flyer on Malik Monk. On the back end of things, the Sacramento Kings have just the two games for this coming week. They don't play again until Thursday, so three games without any action. They take on the Clippers and the Pacers. So you add a guy like Marvin Bagley because you think there's going to be long-term value. Same with Bogdan Bogdanovic. But adding, say, a Harry Giles on the hope, well, you might not get anything happening, and you're going to have 3 days with no action. That's really just a deeper league type scenario. Same with someone like Iman Shumpert, who's been playing pretty well for this team. And dropping Nemanja Bjelica would make more sense here. You get those three games and his value is dropping off pretty considerably. It's hard to imagine there's any Kings players that you would start in weekly lineups in 12-teamers and probably even in 14-teamers as well for this coming week. Not a great schedule for those guys. The Week 7 preview, we have got 11 teams with 4 games this week and 3 teams with 2 games, meaning there are 16 teams in the middle with a 3-game week. It's an interesting week in terms of streaming possibilities. We have 7 games on Monday, that's a stream day. 5 games on Tuesday, that's a stream day. 10 on Wednesday, not a stream. 3 on Thursday, absolutely a stream. 11 on Friday, 7 on Saturday, and 6 on Sunday. So we're basically able to stream 5 of the 7 days this week, just not on Wednesday and Friday. So utilizing your streams, utilizing your matchup acquisitions is key for this week because you might only have 4 acquisitions, but you've got 5 days. So getting guys with back-to-backs or with pseudo back-to-backs can be pretty key. Now, there is only one team who starts the week with a back-to-back on that Monday, Tuesday. That's the Indiana Pacers, who take on the Utah Jazz and the Phoenix Suns. So guys like, they've got a ton of injuries as well. Domantas Sabonis, Victor Oladipo, and Miles Turner are all questionable. So maybe you look at Thaddeus Young if he was dropped, Kylo Quinn, the Cock Monster, Aaron Holiday, Tyreke Evans, Corey Joseph, Daz Collison. Some of these guys might seem like standard league players, but they haven't been performing that way, and they may have been dropped like Darren Collison or Tyreke Evans, but now is a good opportunity to add them, get those two games for the price of one to begin the week. The Pacers also have the Tuesday-Thursday pseudo back-to-back, so you can add those guys and get 3 games in 4 days for 1 waiver acquisition. The Lakers also have the Tuesday-Thursday pseudo back-to-back, as do the Toronto Raptors. They're the 3 teams who have that Tuesday-Thursday. And then Friday, or the Thursday-Saturday pseudo back-to-back, we've got the Pacers as well. So they have got an excellent schedule, a team with 4 quality games for this week, the only team with a schedule that strong to have those 4 quality games. So streaming Pacers guys is very, very useful for this coming week. The other teams with that Thursday, Saturday back-to-back, it is the Toronto Raptors. So they have a relatively strong schedule, only 3 games for the week, and all 3 of those games are quality games. And then you've got the Warriors, the same story for them, only 3 games, but all of those are quality games. So some important value there. The Kings, on the other hand, I talked about them as having a bad schedule, but they do play the Thursday, Saturday pseudo back-to-back, so you might be able to add Kings guys and get 2 games out of them. Compare them to the Thunder, who also have 2 games. None of those fall on quality game days. Or even compare them to, say, the Magic, who play 3 games. They only have 1 quality game. So guys maybe like DJ Augustin is going to have less value than someone like an Iman Shumpert, who you might get 2 games worth at the end of the week. So it's all about balancing that. The 3 teams with 2 games this week are the Thunder, the Nuggets, and the Kings. And the 4-game teams are the Hornets, the Rockets, the Pacers, the Spurs, Pelicans, Jazz, Lakers, Suns, Wizards, Cavs, and Bulls. So it is important to make sure you're looking at not only who is playing, but when they are playing, what day they are playing, and how you can best use your team's or your league's schedule, your team's roster to get the most bang for your buck for this coming week. Some other players to pay attention to for this week whose value may be boosted by injuries or by the way the schedule pans out: Cody Zeller, PJ Tucker, and Bojan Bogdanovic. They all have some increased value this week and could be weekly start guys. Josh the Hitman Hart also gets a bit of a boost in this week. His value hasn't been great, but he's someone you might be able to look at with the Lakers playing 4 games. Mikal Bridges, Kelly Oubre Jr., Derek Favors, and Jordan Clarkson are some fringe guys who might be on your waiver wire who could produce a little bit of extra value this week as opposed to what they normally do. You can check out a lot of the schedule stuff over on Basketball Monster. Matt Smith has an article up over there as well talking about the schedule. Let's move on now. Talk some DFS. We will go to DraftKings first. the perfect lineup: Dwayne Wade, 52.75, D'Angelo Russell, Toby Harris, Kawhi Leonard, Enes Kanter, Jimmy Butler, Harry Giles, and Bam Adebayo with your perfect lineup there for a total of 434.75, and that costs $50,000 on FanDuel. Emmanuel Mudiay and Ravishing Rick Rubio are your point guards. D'Angelo Russell and Jim Butler are your shooting guards. Bembry and Kawhi are your small forwards. Triple J and Harry Giles are your power forwards, while Marc Gasol was your center for a total of 437.4 points, and that costs the full $60,000 dues. All right, let's look at these games now for the coming day in the NBA. All right, the first game we look at is the Minnesota Timberwolves traveling to the to take on the Cleveland Cavaliers in Cleveland. Of course, we're going to be looking at FanDuel pricing today. The Wolves are favored by 6, and the total is 216.5 points. Let's talk point guards. Jeff Teague.
My name is Jeff.
He is at 6,500. He's been at around that 30-point mark, 29-point mark, which isn't quite enough, but it is a pretty good upside opportunity. He does well against Cleveland. It's a good matchup, so I do like Teague here. Derrick Rose at 6,500 as well has been outplaying Teague by about 3 to 4 points per game. His shooting is absolutely red hot, so I do have a little bit of a fear that if that drops off at all, his value won't be there. But with the way he's going, he's doing it every game, so not real too much of a concern there. And the other guy in play is the Padawan, Colin Sexton, 5,800. He is also doing it with very, very high shooting. That makes him more of a tournament sort of a player, but the fact that he's averaging just 30 with this high shooting and not doing too much else makes him a bit of a risky option. I looked today on Cleaning the Glass. He's in the 100th percentile for percentage of his shots that he does take in the mid-range, so there's a real risk of some of that value disappearing. At shooting guard, Andrew Wiggins has been piss poor. He's averaged 13 points over his last three. I think a lot of people will be off him. That means he could be a contrarian tournament guy, but that is it. Same as David Nwaba at 4,800, who is starting and can get you 25 to 26 points, but the price on FanDuel is a little bit high to consider him too much more than a tournament player. 5,700 for Jordan Clarkson, I actually quite like that a bit. He's about a 28, 29 point per game guy, which is totally fine in this scenario. On the wings, Rocket Rodney Hood at 5,000 and Chetty Osman at 55. I think both of them are in play here with some pretty decent minutes coming their way, while Robert Covington at 6,800. He's probably a 34-point guy, which is fine. I'm not sure there's much upside in that, but he could be a relatively solid cash guy. Now, he was terrible last game, couldn't shoot at all, but still had 30 fantasy points. So that gives you a relative idea of what his floor can be. At power forward, I don't really like it at all. Taj, Šarić, Nance, really hard to get behind any of those guys. Šarić had a big game last time, putting up 36 points, but was only 25 minutes, and I think that level of productions are probably a little bit inflated. Tristan Thompson is giving you big, big numbers. He's at 6,500. He's averaging 35 over his last five. It's not a terrible option to use Thompson in the way that he's playing. And Karl Anthony Towns at 10,800. It's a big price. But he had 70 last game. Majority of the time without Butler here, he has been able to put up good numbers, so I'm okay with using Towns as well. Let's flick it over, have a look at some options on DraftKings. I like Nwaba a lot more there, same as Osman, as well as Towns, who comes in at 10,000. Wigo is still the tournament guy, as is Rocket Rodney Hood, who comes in at 4,200, but with real 30-point upside, making him a tournament-type guy. 6,100 for Thompson is also pretty appealing over on DraftKings for this matchup. The next game we look at, the Houston Rockets and the Washington Wizards. The Rockets are 3.5-point favorites. Worth having a look at the total in this one as well, which is 224. Chris Paul is questionable, as is Gerald Green, while Dwight Howard is also questionable with gluteal soreness. I highly doubt that Dwight Howard is going to play in this one. Paul rested last game and now has this leg issue. I would think the Rockets would be cautious with Chris, and I doubt that he plays as well, which boosts the value of Jim Harden and Eric Gordon. If we look at the point guard situation, as for Paul at 8,500, if he was to play, I think he'd be okay, but I don't think we should be going down that direction. While Johnny Wall's at 9,300 on FanDuel, he's giving you 40 relatively consistently. I'm not sure he's the best option out here, especially against Houston, which is playing at a relatively slow pace this season. I think you can do better than John Wall. At shooting guard, I like Eric Gordon at 5,100, coming off his best game of the season where he dropped 38 points. In that one, and if Paul is out, I think another big performance can be coming from Gordo. Well, Jimmy Harden at 11-7 is as rock solid as it gets, especially with the doubt on Chris Paul's head. Bradles-Beals at 8,200. He's almost a 40-point guy most nights. Absolutely no worries with him in cash or in tournaments. For the small forwards, Jimmy Ennis is at 3,700. Paul's absence might make me marginally interested. It probably won't because he is just not a high usage or high stat accumulator. While Otto Porter, the minutes in the production are way up. 48 points in the last game for Porter, averaging 41 over his last three. That's after the lineup change to get Kelly Oubre into the starting lineup. 6,500 for Otto. I know you must be having some residual PTSD from using him earlier in the season, but I actually think he's not a bad option here with how he's been playing recently. I don't really like Oubre outside of tournaments. The Comet Gary Clark's not doing it for me, and Jeff Green, you can do better. At power forward, Markeith Morris thriving in this bench role, 4,700. With Dwight unlikely to play, I think that Markeith at 47 is a very, very good option at that price point. PJ Tucker at 43, you can do better. And then the centers, Capella's at 8,600. He is playing some big, big time minutes and big time basketball, averaging 54 over his last three. Really like the matchup. He'll be going up against Thomas Bryant most likely, but Bryant has not played 20 minutes in each of the last three games that he's started with Dwight sideline. So maybe you could throw him into a tournament player pool, that is Thomas Bryant, but I'm not really overly interested in him in that regard. On DraftKings, it's not a game that projects massively well on DraftKings. I think Harden at 11-4 is strong. Eric Gordon at 48 is very strong. You got Tomas Satoransky at 35, who Scott Brooks said, oh, we've got to give him more minutes. Did that for one game and then played him 15 so that he could get Austin Rivers out there for much more time. So again, Scott Brooks, very little idea what he's doing most of the time. Yeah, maybe you look at Satoransky as a GPP guy. I also like the 5,700 that is priced for Otto Porter over on DraftKings. The Milwaukee Bucks and the Charlotte Hornets. The Hornets on a back-to-back after losing to the Hawks. The Bucks are favored by 5. The total is a big one. 235.5, the biggest total of the day. The Bucks will be looking to bounce back after losing to the Phoenix Suns. Both Ersan Ilyasova and the big ragu Dante DiVincenzo are both questionable for Milwaukee, while Tony Parker and Michael Kidd-Gilchrist are questionable for the Hornets. At point guard, Kemba's at 9,200, still putting up some good numbers despite, you know, not quite being where he was before, but 9,200 is a much more palatable price for Kemba, so I think that's fine. You know, Tony Parker, we don't really look at. I love Jez Lamb at 6,500, just consistency plus the way that he is going. Malcolm Brogdon at 54, also giving you 30 a night. Very hard to ignore that with the tighter pricing on FanDuel. While Chrissy Middleton at 74, being a little bit under where he needs to be, but he's got a great record against Charlotte, a 43.8 average. I think that Middleton is someone to look at. Small forward, you got Batum at 5,100. More of a tournament play than anything. Bit hard to rely upon him in cash. Well, Yanni at 12.7. Now, I love Yanni. That's a big price. He's been living up to it, averaging 65 over the last three, but that is real big, and you need 65 to break even. So I'm not sure the value in Antetokounmpo is there outside of maybe a tournament with getting some other low-priced upside type of guys in next to him. At power forward, Marvin Williams at 45. Well, Marv is averaging 28 over the last three. So if MKG is ruled out, I think you could look at him as a solid enough cash guy. If Kidd-Gilchrist plays, pretty tough. Well, Ilyasova not really moving the needle for anybody. At center, Cody Zeller's at 49. He's been giving you good numbers too. I think that helps that Kidd-Gilchrist was out. So if Michael returns, I'm not sure that Cody is going to be able to give us that value. Well, 5,000 for Brook Lopez. He's struggled the last couple of games, but he has got clear 40-point upside. So I do like him for tournaments. Zeller is more of a cash player. On DraftKings, Marvin Williams at 37. That's pretty tough to ignore in all formats. Jeremy Lamb at 56, the same. And Antetokounmpo at 11.6 is nice. Kemba at 9,400, not quite as good as where he sits on FanDuel, where he comes in actually cheaper. And Zeller at 4,000 has a relatively solid floor. Brogdon at 5,300 looks okay on DraftKings also. The next game up for us to pay attention to is the Boston Celtics and the New Orleans Pelicans. No spread or total at this point because Anthony Davis is still questionable. Jaylen Brown is doubtful to play, while Gordon Hayward, who missed the last game due to ankle soreness, he's not even on the injury report, so we assume that Gordo is ready to go. Terry Rozier also listed as probable. If Davis is out, Nikola Mirotic and Julius Randle get significant bumps, as Etuan Moore gets a bump and Drew Holiday as well, but Mirotic and Randle are going to be the guys to really target. With Jaylen out, You think that Terry Rozier and Marcus Smart get a bump in their playing time. So Rozier coming in at 3,800 in a really good matchup. He could be a 25-point guy, which at 3,800 is great value, especially given the fact that Davis and Yanni are both 12,000-plus guys. Getting someone like Rozier in, who's been shitful this season, no doubt, but can have a 30-pointer with this extra opportunity, he becomes a good tournament play. Kyrie's at 9,000, giving you about 42 over the last five. It is a fairly strong matchup for Irving against New Orleans. Has done very well against them, averaging 49 in the last three contests. So I think Kyrie at 9,000 is pretty good to look at. And opposition point guards have had some good success putting up DFS points against them this season. Marcus Smart, the same thing I just said for Rozier. He's averaged 38 the last three times against the Pelicans. No Jaylen Brown. Massive opportunity for Smart. I like him even in cash games. While Drew Holiday at 8,900. I think that's almost a bankable lock at that price. He has been fantastic this season. Small forwards, you've got Wesley Johnson, Gordy Haywood. Haywood at 6,400. More for tournaments, I think, with how unsure his play has been. Well, Mirotić at 7,500. I love that. I love it even more if Davis happens to be out. Who else? I feel like we're missing someone. Jason Tatum is listed as a power forward, so he's at 6,800. He is more of a tournament guy, but even then, I don't think it's a relatively strong play. The next game up, we're looking at the San Antonio Spurs. And actually, did I go through the DraftKings value? I don't think I did. Let's do that now. I do like Al Horford. Actually, I'm all over the place. My apologies. I didn't even finish off doing that game, did I? Just had a really itchy nose. Had to pause the broadcast and then forgot where I was at. Big men. Al Horford, 6,300 on FanDuel. He's worth a look. I think that's a pretty solid option. Against Davis, he does do okay. As for Davis at 12,600, I think it's pretty tough to use him at that price, given the uncertainty. In fact, I think that's a pretty strong fade. Marcus Morris, who started the last couple at 51, I think that's an okay cash play. Just not sure there's much upside there. While Julius Randle at 78, he had 59 last game. You would absolutely smash the shit out of Randle, I think, if Davis does happen to be out. He has struggled at times against Boston, but I feel pretty good about him getting you 40 plus if Tone Davis happens to sit out of this game. Etuan Moore, one that I missed before, 5,900. He's more of a tournament guy that does really rely upon high efficiency, just doesn't do enough in those other areas to make him a sensational fantasy or DFS guy. On DraftKings, I like Haywood and Holiday quite a bit. Of course, the Mirotić Randle boost is significant if Davis is out, and Rozier, Smart, and Haywood also have some appeal over on DraftKings also. Now, let's go to the next game, which is the San Antonio Spurs and the Chicago Bulls. The Spurs are favored by 6.5, and the total is 215. Big men have done very, very well against the Bulls this season, and this game shouldn't be any different. Chandler Hutchison is questionable for Chicago. If he is out, Jabari Parker and Justin Holiday, they get big boosts in minutes. They play about 40 minutes a night when Hutchison's out, and that gives them a tremendous amount of value. At point guard, Ryan Arcidiacono is getting minutes, but not really production. I don't really like him. Same with Bryn Forbes at 4,000. They just don't do it. In fact, point guard, I think, in this game is a big stay away. Shooting guards, I love DeMar DeRozan at 8,900. I'm not sure the Spurs are really good enough to blow out the Bulls, so DeMar should be looking at a 45-point type performance, while Zachy LaVine at 8,600, putting up some good numbers. The efficiency is not great from him, but he's still getting you 42, 43 relatively regularly. So I do like LaVine, while Justin Holiday at 57, love that, and I'd smash that if Chandler Hutchison does happen to be sidelined. Jabari Parker at 75 is averaging 46 points on FanDuel over the last three games, and coinciding with Hutchison's absence. So if Chandler is out, Jabari should be in your lineups. While Rudy Gay at 6,300, if he has to match up any times against Jabari, he could really smash that value. So I like Rudy Gay quite significantly here. Aldridge at 8,500, we know he's been up and down, but this should have 40 points written all over it against the Chicago Bulls and how piss poor they are. So Aldridge is an option, while Wendell Carter Jr. can't stay out of foul trouble. He's at 6,500. It could happen, and he's a 40-point upside guy, putting him in your tournament pool, but I don't love it for the general cash-type scenario. And then centers, we're talking Poeltl, Lopez, and Felizio, and I probably shouldn't have even said that much. On DraftKings, I like Holiday, Gay, LaVine, and DeRozan. They're all got some cash value. Aldridge as well, while Wendell Carter is more of your GPP guy, as is Antonio Blakeney, as one of those guys who will just take every shot under the sun. The next game is the Indiana Pacers and the Utah Jazz. No spread for this one because Victor Oladipo, Miles Turner, and DeMontis Sabonis are all questionable for Indiana, while the Don, Donovan Mitchell, is also questionable for Utah after missing today's game. So there's a lot of different things. Of course, if those centers miss, we're looking at Kylo Quinn pretty significantly. Aaron Holiday jumps in, as does Corey Joseph, Daz Collison, and Tyreke Evans. If Oladipo misses out, Thaddeus Young gets a boost if one of those big men are out, and TJ Leaf could be your sneaky option as a real long shot GPP guy if both Turner and Sabonis are missing. But O'Quinn would be the guy that would be very much all over if both of those big men happen to be sidelined. Assuming all these guys play, there's not a lot to like at the point guard spot for Indiana, while ravishing Rick Rubio at 6,900 is probably priced a little bit too high. The Don at 7,900, I think I'd leave him alone in this game. Oladipo at 9,000, no way coming back from a knee injury would I want to use that. In fact, this whole game feels like a big stay away to me. The small forwards, Bojan Bogdanovic at 5,300, he's giving you about 29 a game at the moment, which is pretty strong value. Whether that can continue remains to be seen, but if Oladipo's out, I'd feel okay about using Bojan. Not much else at small forward. Or maybe Jay Crowder at 49, given the fact that he might start. I think that that's a relatively safe cash play, and Jinglin Joe at 6,000 I think is not a bad option as well. Favors at 5,900, I'll probably leave him alone, despite that big defensive performance. And Thaddeus Young, I talked about him already, 4,800 for Young. He is someone that if one of those big men are out, he should get a 4 or 5 minute boost, and that should push him well past that $4,800 price point. As for Sabonis, if DeMontis plays and Miles Turner is out, that $6,900 price tag for Sabonis
giggity
is something that can be pretty easily overcome, so I like him there. Same with Turner, who is averaging 37 the last three times against Gobert and the Jazz. He's at 6,000. If Sabonis is out, I'm all about that. And the Jazz have had some trouble with opposition centers this season. Now, if both Sabonis and Turner play, I think that it'd be hard to really utilize either of those guys. But if one is out, then you really go aggressively onto the other one. As for Gobert at 8,100, has done well against Indiana in the past, but his recent form's not quite up to scratch. So I think that the 8,100 might leave him into being a fade. On DraftKings, Crowder at 42 looks pretty nice. I don't mind Favors at 48. And the same story for Young, Sabonis, and Turner, depending on how those injuries play out, as well as Holiday. The last game of the day is the Orlando Magic on a back-to-back after beating the Lakers, now traveling to take on the Golden State Warriors. The Warriors are favored by 8, and the total is 214.5. No Steph Curry, while Draymond Green and Alphonso McKinney, they are both questionable at the moment. I like DJ Augustine quite a bit. Especially on DraftKings, but on FanDuel at 4,500, he looks pretty nice. I think that's a solid cash option. Jaren Grant, not so much. Sean Livingston, also not so much. But I also like Quinn Cook at 5,400. Around a 25-point type of guy with 40-point upside, I think he is worth looking at. Shooting guard, Klay Thompson's playing really well at the moment. 7,200 for Klay. No worries about using him at the moment. While Terry Ross at 41 has got great upside, but the inconsistency is a little bit tough to stomach for cash. I think Fournier's got a bounce-back game in him, 6,400. I don't want to rely upon that for cash, though. For a bounce-back, it's just a little bit too high. And then the small forwards, Kevin Durant's at 11,500. Love that, averaging 61 over the last three. That's a real cash lock. Johnny Simmons and John Isaac, probably both pretty strong fades. Draymond at 75, we don't know if he's going to play, but I think if he does play, he'd be worth throwing in your late swap on DraftKings or even into your FanDuel lineup, although it's probably a bit risky having a guy like Draymond at that price as the guy who gets dropped out of your lineup. It may not work out to your advantage. I like Az Gordon at 78, a little bit of a lean run, but I think he can have a big one here. And at center, Looney, Damo Jones, Jordy Bell, who knows what Steve Kerr is going to do.
But you can call me Coach Steve.
I think we probably leave those guys alone. Well, Vucevic is the main draw here. He's up to $9,000, putting up some monster games. Now, centers historically have struggled against the Warriors. It's pretty similar again this season. $9,000 is a big chunk to put on a guy on a back-to-back. So I'd probably leave Vucevic. That could bite me in the ass, but I think I'll probably leave him. There's just a few factors going against him for this day of games. On DraftKings, Augustine and Fournier, I think, are really good options at their price points, as is Durant at $10,900. Let's go through the studs and values. On DraftKings, we've got Drew Holiday at 83 as the best stud, and the value play is Nwaba at 37. On FanDuel, the stud is Levine at 86, and the value is Marcus Smart at 4,000. On Yahoo, my stud is Levine at 35, and my value is minimum salary David Nwaba. And on Draft Stars, my start is Karl Anthony Towns at 16,270, and my value is Rocket Rodney Hood at 7,550. Guys, go ahead and subscribe to this podcast on Apple Podcasts, Google Play, TuneIn, Stitcher, and on Spotify. Leave me a 5-star review. That'd be great. And on YouTube, you can hit subscribe and hit that bell so you know when each episode comes out, and leave a comment and hit the like or thumbs up or whatever button it is over there on YouTube. Guys, we are done here. Thank you so much for listening, everyone. See ya.
I'm a fun guy.